I think we'll be fine. We're sitting here talking to Charles Cable. This is June 24th, 1996. And because we didn't, I don't have your yellow form we sent out to everyone. You were in Laos. Were you in
Vietnam?
Vietnam in what years?
I was in Vietnam from July 1966 to March 1968.
Okay.
I was in the IVS unit that started training in mid-June 1966.
Okay. Because there was a February class.
Tom Fox was in that group.
That was actually one of my questions that I asked. Well, we can get started. Based on that, I'm on automatic pilot for these questions. I ask a series of background questions just for comparison purposes with the other people in the group. Your birth date is?
January 22, 1944.
And you were born in?
Tacoma, Washington.
Tacoma, Washington. And did you go to high school in Tacoma?
No, I grew up in Goshen, Indiana, that area. Went to New Paris High School.
And what did your parents do in?
My father was a seed corn producer in Elkhart County.
Mm-hmm. And your mother?
Housewife.
Do you have any brothers or sisters?
Four younger brothers.
All brothers.
No sisters.
the next standard question is, did you go to college in Indiana?
I did 2 years at Manchester, mm-hmm. and then transferred out to Laverne and finished my undergraduate work at Laverne in 1966. And what? Two or three classmates went to Vietnam with IBS.
Was it because of Laverne? I mean, at Laverne?
Well, Laverne and Manchester were both Churchill Rowland colleges.
Right.
And likewise, where I came from, Jean Stolzfus was from New Paris, and the family was, we knew the family, but I didn't know Jean personally.
Mm-hmm.
I had a classmate or two classmates from Manchester that were in IVS, Ron Beam and Bob Minnick.
Okay.
Bob is in Washington, D.C., and Ron is a pediatrician in Anderson, Indiana.
Okay.
And then from Laverne, there were several of us from Laverne that were in IVS. June and Ron Pulcini were among the older group,
right.
And then Galen Berry. Then the year before me, Ivan and Karen Bowman. My class, Irvin Houston. And I don't recall who else may have been from that. And then following us, Jim Bowman, Ivan's younger brother, went over to Laos. And plus my father, I was a SEAL. And so this was my alternative service.
We're joking with one of the IBS, Fred Branfman, actually from Laos, that neither of us actually got to say, no, I will not. Because of one reason or another, he because he was in IBS, and me because they introduced the lottery before.
Mm-hmm.
We can do that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm
surprised Fred really remembers his experience in Laos.
You're not surprised. There's a student who's going to type this up. Remember that.
Don't be better not to quote that.
In fact, speaking of a student, whenever you mention a Vietnamese name, if you can spell it. Okay. As they type it out, they're not familiar with them, and it really helps them. Otherwise, they end up in my office asking me, and then I have to spell it for them. And sometimes I get it wrong, but I try. I have a map the size of this whole wall of Vietnam in my office just for that reason.
Yeah.
Well, it's just to impress the students. I didn't say that. Okay. How did you first find out about IBS?
Well, because some of our graduates from Laverne and Manchester had already joined IBS on the fact that the IBS was started by the Churchill Brothers and the Mennonites and the Quakers back in the early 50s, actually. I had known about the organization for a number of years. One of my history professor in Manchester led the first team that IBS sent. That was Eldon Burke, a PhD, who died a year or two ago at Pembroke Press in North Manchester. Eldon led a group, and I don't recall which country, if it was Egypt or Iran or where.
Algeria.
I have no idea.
Yeah. Well, we'll know.
Galen Berry could tell you.
Okay.
But So I had known a little bit about that before. And in fact, what was interesting, and digressing a little bit, after I came to Hillcrest in 1982, I learned that one of our residents had been on that first team. That was Martha Ruppel Gilbert, R-U-P-E-L, mm-hmm. Gilbert. Interesting that
yes.
She married a Gilbert, Mark,
uh-huh.
From the Pasadena area. Martha was a nurse on that first group. And so here, and then one of our immediate next door neighbors at Hillcrest, in this home on Park Avenue, mm-hmm. That couple, that gentleman was on the board of IVS in the early years.
Mm-hmm.
So there have been a lot of connections,
mm-hmm.
Just coincidentally.
But what actually sparked you?
Okay, what sparked me to join was that in the fall of 65, I knew that I would be facing a decision about my alternative service. Mm-hmm. I'd already declared as a conscientious objector when I was, 18,
mm-hm.
Right after, when I was still a senior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, doing alternative service was always just part of my growing up.
Mm-hmm.
My dad was in CPS. In fact, this book is, I mentioned to your mm-hmm. colleague, that Richard Anderson wrote about the men that were in civilian public service during World War II.
Mm-hmm.
And one of our residents here at Hillcrest, along with my dad and several others, were very close friends. And so that's what I grew up in, is that
mm-hmm.
I would be a conscientious objector and really my own thinking wasn't tested, but that was just part of growing up, and
mm-hmm.
it's like part of going to a church-related college.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just something we did mm-hmm. back in the 50s and 60s.
Mm-hmm.
But in fall of 65, as I was looking ahead to graduation, I started to decide what I wanted to do. Did I want to stay in the States and do some alternative service? And I didn't want to. I wanted to travel. And I made application to the Peace Corps and also to IVS. I met Wilbur Nye. Is that his name? No, excuse me. Willie Myers.
Right.
Nye, that was a, that
that's,
was
that's
a,
later.
Nye was he was from NIH. That was 3 years earlier. But some of us did that type of volunteer work. But Willie Myers came out to Laverne and was recruiting for IVS. And he was on the circuit of all the colleges.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's how I learned more about IVS. I think IVS even had some sort of poster at the college. So through that process, I decided if I was accepted to be able to, I would go to Vietnam if I could.
Were you accepted by the Peace Corps?
Yes, but, and I don't recall now where to, but,
mm-hmm.
but I, I mentioned something to my wife the other day about there's some news article about the FBI forms that people fill out for government application. I said, I remember doing that for the Peace Corps.
Oh, yeah.
And for IVS
mm-hmm.
30-some years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very detailed thing.
Mm-hmm.
My recollection is you had to put down every place you ever were throughout
mm-hmm.
your life.
Mm-hmm.
And Vicky's comment was, how do you remember that? Well, some of us keep a diary and some don't.
Well, when you're 18, though, you have, well, that was in my case. But,
yeah, but I recall it. Wanting to know where all you travel,
mm-hmm.
and when you're 8 or 22 years old, you haven't traveled too much in mm-hmm. most cases.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but
the question was getting into IVS mm-hmm. and the Peace Corps. Yes, I was accepted. But I don't recall now where to,
mm-hmm.
because once I knew I could go to Vietnam.
Okay, well that's
and do my alternative service. My thinking was that I would rather do it in a country where I was more at risk. From a personal standpoint, try to have some impact. That's all I can recall. Now, that was 30 years
ago. Oh, yeah, I know. But
how do we recall all of that?
You know, we all should have these photographic memories and then find out that they're wrong. Yeah. Do you think you felt you wanted to go somewhere where your life might be a personal risk, purely because of your youth? When you got to Vietnam, did you kind of reflect on that and say, now why would I ask to do this, and reflect and say, well, no, I must have been.
Well, you know, where I was in Vietnam, I was in, you know, spent some time in Saigon, 6 weeks in Nha Trang, plus some additional time just traveling, doing firms like Saigon. And then I live in Phan Rang, in Ninh Thuan province, which is now Tuan Hai province. No, it's back in Ninh Thuan, I was just told. They separated the province again sometime last year. But anyway, all three places were relatively peaceful. I wasn't subjected to the security concerns that a lot of our other colleagues in IVS were.
Well, before we go too far off the track on that, when you were you decided to go somewhere, you didn't mind, you wanted a place where
there was some
sense of risk, because
others were facing risk, and those who went in the military,
exactly.
And far more risk than I could ever conceive myself being as a civilian, and as it turned out, as we were.
So you decided that when you accepted, now you understood from the very beginning that the IBS was recruiting people for Laos and Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
That was why the recruiter was
That's
there.
Right.
He wasn't saying
That's
to go
right.
somewhere else.
Oh no.
And were you aware from the very beginning that USAID was funding the under contract?
I don't recall that.
Mm-hmm. And at the introductory session, did you go to Harpers Ferry?
Mm-hmm.
Let's see, you were the. Okay, yes.
The June.
You were June 66. Mm-hmm.
Around the 15th of June.
Right.
So earlier.
Did you realize then? I'm just trying to place when you realized that this was a contract service for the USAID.
I have no idea.
Would it have mattered?
At that time, not seriously, not as it did to some of the other people in IVS, the volunteers, who took the government involvement far more seriously than I did.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting.
I can recall going in, I was even questioning my own CO stand at the time, and during those first 2 weeks. And I went in to see George Brown Jr., who was a congressman at that time from Monterey Park and now from San Bernardino.
Mm-hmm.
He's been an old family friend.
Really?
He served in civilian public service for a very short time and was with my dad at Cascade Locks in Oregon. And then George decided, this is parenthetical, but he decided that he wanted to be in the Army and to serve, because he had other plans in his life. But I recall going in to see George before we left for the Philippines and Vietnam, and I told him that I wasn't so sure that maybe the war was a good thing. And this is coming from the mouth of a CO who had grown up in all this church support and family support for being a CO. And I can recall George sitting at his desk, and he said, "Chuck, don't forget where you come from." And those were his words. Mm-hmm. "Don't forget where you come from." And that took a long time to really sink in. But I recall those words. Every now and then I remind him of that conversation. Anytime I go into D.C., I try to stop by and see him if I have the time. Because he then, you know, just a few years ago, he reminded me that not everything in the world is black and white.
Mm-hmm.
Gray is the spectrum. Too often, we like to make things black and white. I think a history professor would love that.
Oh, yes.
But anyway, that was in June of 66. The role of the government, I didn't question it.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't an academic. And it didn't really matter to me that much.
Right, it didn't matter actually to most. I mean, as time goes by, it matters more, but then people are more aware of the, I mean, it's always, but what did you think of the, what specialty did you end up?
I ended up in community development.
Okay. So the community development people by June of 66 were going to Los Banos? Or Los Banos, I'm sorry.
Los Banos. Well, Los Banos in the Philippines.
In the Philippines.
Yeah, to the International Rice Research Institute and the University of the Philippines down there, and to study rice production and community development,
and to
how to make Sivaram bricks and and meet Shar Cuenco and her sisters and.
Yes.
We still have pictures of Shar and her sisters before Shar married. Who was it? I don't recall who.
I think we'll find out as time goes
by. Well, I know it's in that last newsletter.
It is?
Okay. It's been in the IBS newsletter from time to time.
Okay, great.
Shar was really a nice lady. Mm-hmm.
And
by the way, that introduced me to Filipino women.
Yes.
And then 3 years later, I married one.
Ah, well, you had experience of, of them. So
yeah.
But did you find, I mean, nothing obviously can prepare one for community development work in any country, actually, but did you
find it background in community development work, but it's an interesting introduction. I was delighted to be at Erie because that was an institute founded by another family friend, I.W. Moonmaw, who was in overseas agricultural projects for much of his career, and my parents had always thought a lot about I.W. And so,
At Erie?
Erie, International Rice Research Institute.
Oh, that's right, I'm sorry.
In Los Banos.
Right, yeah.
And it's one of several international tropical centers around the world.
Yeah.
Another being in India, one being in Colombia, and I don't know where else the others are. But.
And so you finished that project, you went on to...
Well, we were 2 weeks in the Philippines.
Mm-hmm.
And... then went on to Saigon for, we were supposed to be in Saigon for 3 or 4 days in early July. And from there, several of us went up to Nha Trang for language study.
Mm-hmm.
And I got dysentery my first or second day in country and then ended up at 8th Field Hospital for 2 or 3 days on IVs. I got well enough to go back and get up to a Nha Trang and try to catch up with the language that I
did. Did you catch up?
Well, I never was that successful with the Vietnamese language until I had been there about a year.
Yeah.
And then things started really happening language-wise.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, of course, you were kind of a latecomer. Some people said that was about all the language training they could take to start because a lot of people were eager. You know, to get their assignment.
No, we were eager to get our assignments,
and you succeeded.
Yeah.
And so
in September of that year.
Well, talk us through that.
Okay. Well, I mean, getting to the assignment. If I recall, Don Luce or Gene Sols was one of them took a group of us down to Phan Long, and I don't remember now who was in the group. But we got down to Phan Long, and in fact, I think we stopped in Bang Noi for lunch, and Burl Darrow came up from Phan Long to join us, if my memory is accurate.
Mm-hmm.
And they went on down to Phan Long, and Burl had done some contacts with some of the high schools in the area, and I ended up, in a week or so, I ended up being assigned to Top Chom Junior High School, semi-public junior high school. Top Chom is spelled T-H-A-P-C-H-A-M. That means three temples or something like that. So I signed out there to do English teaching in 3 grades. I think it was 4th, 5th, and 6th. but I don't recall. I'd have to go back and look at my slides.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe seventh class, 5, 6, 7.
Now these were, and look.
There were elementary and
right,
junior high.
They hadn't taken an exam to go to secondary school. This is pre-secondary.
From there, they would have gone to the Buddhist high school, mm-hmm. the Catholic high school, or to Zuitan, which is the public high school in Fanon.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was leaving in 68, but they were building, I believe, another school that may have been a high school for Topchang. But I can recall going into a building that was being built in
mm-hmm.
the school, but I don't remember what grades it was for.
Mm-hmm.
My friends could tell me. I mean, just call here in Southern California, ask them,
uh-huh.
now what was that school for?
Yeah.
When we got to site into Fanrang, Burl, Dara, and Bob Hargraves were already there.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob was going to be leaving that fall, sometime that fall, and Burl, I think, was there until 67 for the whole school year. And Burl was an English teacher, really great English teacher, and Bob was in agriculture. Are you interviewing
Fighting Bob? A chicken flu epidemic currently in Bakersfield.
He is.
Yes, he is. I had a problem with a car I'm using, and I had to use someone else's car that I didn't want to take to Bakersfield. So I called him over the weekend and said, I can't make it now, but can I schedule later in the week, and when I get my car back,
yeah.
I'll probably be interviewing him on Thursday or Friday.
Well, he was on, he was coming into Bangkok for Don's second tour 5.5 years ago. As we were coming out,
mm-hmm.
and so I saw him for the first time then, after 66.
At the airport?
No, at the hotel.
At the hotel?
In Bangkok, where we were staying.
Yeah, I almost saw Don in Bangkok a couple of years ago, but I dismissed him. I was kind of mm-hmm. disappointed, but I've seen him in Washington, but it would have been nice.
Yeah.
He was out on one of those AIDS programs, and I wish I could have met him before.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, my visa to Vietnam, which I picked up in Bangkok, was my draft lottery.
Huh?
Well, my draft lottery number was 264.
Yeah.
And my visa for January was 264.
Now, what's the chance of that?
There is no chance.
There
is no chance.
How many millions to one is that?
Millions to one. That's right. That's I knew I was in some serious business here when that happened. And by the way, I didn't trust myself. I went home, but when I got home, I got out my, this is the draft handbook that I had, and it had the November 1970 whatever draft lottery,
mm-hmm.
and there it was, because I just didn't trust myself. I couldn't believe that would happen, because they took masses of passports
mm-hmm.
over, and it's like January 2nd, and actually the odds aren't astronomical, but they're big. And so Bob was just about to leave, or
yeah.
leaving, and
well, Bob was going to be leaving, and I wasn't teaching full time, and so I had some other time on my hands. And so Bob said, would I mind coming along learning how to vaccinate chickens? Well, it turned out that Bob had not taught the Vietnamese, or that was the impression he left me. There was a National Voluntary Service Station in Top Chung, and so we got some of the NVSers to go with us to Aten Ya Ho. That's where Dick Peters was assigned a couple of years earlier, before the VC started running through the area. And vaccinated some chicks out there and went to a couple other farmers that had chickens. And so Bob taught me three or four how to use different vaccines. And I recall learning that one type of vaccine went into the nostril, and one went into the back or the breast of the chick, little tiny things. And ended up successfully vaccinating chickens for a variety of diseases. And I still don't know what all, now I don't recall what all they were for. But But my job in that was really to teach the Vietnamese how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why the Vietnamese veterinarians didn't do that themselves, but you know, Mark, I have, you know, Bob could describe what he was doing.
Oh, sure, and we'll find out. Maybe it was the vaccine that was being donated.
Yeah.
So.
Well, but the Vietnamese animal husbandry offices had the vaccine. We kept it in the freezer, the refrigerator, and then I would take it in a styrofoam box with dry ice or something, and take it out and do this. I only killed a few chicks doing all this, but.
Well, you can't make it.
And I have pictures of it too, Mark.
Uh-huh. Of dead chicks?
No.
Being vaccinating.
Vaccinating. Yes. And I was about 160 pounds then.
Mm-hmm. I was 140, I remember. Very, very interesting experience. Everyone does look lanky in the pictures.
So. Oh, yeah.
Actually, that was, of course, amongst veterans, you know, the combat troops.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their mothers wrote them, "Why are you so thin?"
Yeah.
And, what did that lead to? I mean, that wasn't your assigned.
Well, that was just for a few months, and then I did that for several weeks after Bob left.
Mm-hmm.
But then that was done. I did not have an agriculture background in animal husbandry.
Mm-hmm.
And even though I grew up on a farm, I knew very little about farming because it was a business, and I was in college. So I was one of the few farm kids that didn't know farming. And,
you have an older brother that had to learn?
No, all my brothers are younger.
Uh-huh.
And in producing hybrid seed corn, you don't raise many animals.
Mm-hmm. No.
At least we didn't.
No, and, not even talking pigs.
No.
The
all we had were rabbits.
Which one was in my backyard, by the way, this morning. So did you revert back to the education?
Yeah,
side?
Then I did education for a full year. Mm-hmm. A year and a half for almost 2 years that I was there.
And Phong Rong? Or?
We lived in Phong Rong. And I taught in Top Chum.
Okay.
And we lived next door to the Catholic High School. In fact, I have a picture of the house that we lived in. It's been added on since. One of our friends took a picture and sent it over.
Well, that's great.
Late last year, early this year. I want to talk about Top Chum at the Summer Public Junior High School. My best friend there that I worked with, the teacher I worked with, became a very good friend. And he finally got out last fall. And he's in Durham, North Carolina with his brother, who was a diplomat with the Vietnamese government.
Mm-hmm.
But it took all this time for him to get out of Vietnam with his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And their youngest son.
Why was that, do you think?
According to the ODP, he didn't serve in re-education, he wasn't in a re-education camp long enough to qualify for an earlier departure date. And from 1975, when the war ended, to last year, he was not allowed to hold any jobs, but he supplemented their income by teaching English.
Mm-hmm.
And in the past several years, he's done extremely well because even the current Vietnamese government people have wanted to learn English.
Mm-hmm.
And so he became okay for him to do that. And and throughout all these years, somehow they survived. He sent his kids through college. The oldest daughter is now has some one or two children of her own. And his oldest son works for Remy Martin, the liquor company.
Mm-hmm.
And then the youngest is in Durham, going to college. And it was the oldest that I knew as an infant when I was in Vietnam.
What was his position?
Yvonne?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't give you his name. His name is Ton, T-O-N, Tot, T-H-A-T, Vun, V-A-N. Vun was an English teacher at Top Chum and also Zui Tun High School. He had served in the South Vietnamese Army as a captain down in the Delta. I don't recall which province. One of the provinces is near Saigon, and he was in charge of security. And I think he had more trouble because I wrote to him and tried to visit him in 1990 than he had had from his service and being in IVS there, mm-hmm. than he had being in the Vietnamese Army. His friendship with Americans was a cause for a lot of the questioning that he had from the Vietnamese security folks.
Was he actually employed by IVS?
No.
No, good.
He was employed by Sutton High School and
You're just referring to his contact with
IVS. His contact with IVS. And the fact that we spent a lot of time together. Mm-hmm. I visited his home a number of times during our IVS days. Mm-hmm. And then I wrote to him a number of times. Several years ago, after things started loosening up, I recall writing. In fact, he told me the story earlier this spring. I wrote to him, care of Retown High School, because I didn't have his address. And one of my former students works at the post office in Phan Rang, and saw my letter and got it, and took it to Van and said, Van, Mr. Chuck has written to you. And that's just amazing. And I hear this now. After, I don't know, maybe 10 years, Mark. Mm-hmm. I don't know how many years ago that was. Mm-hmm. If you called Vaughn, he could tell you. Mm-hmm. But that was so remarkable. When I was in D.C. and drove down. It was good to see. It was just so good to see. His wife, that was just so marvelous. They couldn't believe that we finally, after all these years, have worked together again. But I asked him about all the teachers I had worked with, because I still have their names. I have some of their business cards, and the Vietnamese business card, and address. And somebody had told me that one of them had been killed. Found out. He hadn't been killed at all. He's a very successful grape farmer south of Phan Rang. If you ever drive on Highway 1, mm-hmm. going from down the coast, mm-hmm. through Phan Rang onto Saigon, he has one of the farms right on Highway 1, just south of Phan Rang, in one of those villages down there, mm-hmm. Doing very, very well. Another teacher.
Do you know his name?
Yeah, Khoi, K-H-O-I. Mr. Chun, C-H-A-N-H. Uh-huh. If you need the first names, I can get them.
Okay.
My only concern is that if their names are in some book,
we're not going to use anybody's name without their permission, probably. And we're historians, so we know how to. There's no necessity to have the name. Where there is a necessity, we'll check.
I don't understand what these security folks are doing, but I do know that. What we were subjected to 5.5 years ago was no fun. I can't imagine that.
Well, it's changed. It's changed a great deal, but you never know. Things can change back.
Yes.
And but the reason I mention that is if I am driving down Highway 1, which I may in January or February, well, I'm going to try to go for 3 months in December. From December to March, I'm asking for a leave of absence, which I may not get. And I just want to live there.
Gosh, I wish I could go with you.
Well, come on.
Man.
Let's go. It's on me. I'll pay.
It's on you.
It's on me. We have to live simply. Yeah. But
that doesn't bother me. It's,
yeah.
Yeah. I'm still putting 2 kids through college.
Oh, well, that shoots that.
$50,000 last year, and another this year.
Uh-huh. But anyway, if I want to see, I can ask around and say, Corey's great.
In Phan Rang, the principal of the elementary school on Highway 1, downtown, is Mr. Chan, C-H-A-N-H, and I can get you his full name.
Okay.
But he has sent greetings to me. He has worked for the government all these years. Mm-hmm. I was in his home shortly before I left. In fact, he gave me a good a farewell dinner. I can't remember. I think Coy, I think, was the principal at Tuck Chum. And Chum was just, was another teacher. I'd have to ask Vaughn, who had what position. Mm-hmm. Anyway, Chum still's there. And I was, 5.5 years ago, we were hoping to see Chum. And Vaughn was waiting at his home when the day we were scheduled to be there. Mm-hmm. And didn't get there. I'm sure Don told you all about that. Don,
no, I haven't. I'm not interviewing Don for this project.
Oh, really?
Paul is. He's doing the East Coast.
Oh, this is a 1990 incident.
Yeah.
Not related to 1967.
67. Oh, it doesn't matter. We're going to go all the way up till today.
Okay. But there were some. There were a couple other teachers that I've asked about, but I won't. Offhand recall their names.
Mm-hmm.
That I did work with. Coy I worked with directly, and Chun I worked with directly, and Vaughn, and Vaughn the most. And it was through Vaughn that I maintained the contact.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow he was able to keep my address, too, which is just, that was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then right, being able to write to him at Georgetown High School, reestablishing contact then, several years ago.
What did you think of the value of the work that you were doing?
Well, the teaching of English, I felt, and I still feel, that any student anywhere in the world needs to learn English.
Mm-hmm.
If they're going to be involved in education, in commerce, any types of commerce. They can be in this type of work, but where they're involved with a worldwide knowledge situation. Teaching students about another culture, I think, is valuable. I just regret that in our country we don't have the kids learn a language, a second language, from the third grade on. Even my own kids, coming from a multicultural home, only know English. They have studied Spanish or German, but they don't study it for more than 2 or 3 years. I still believe that the basic reason for teaching a foreign language is important.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the what we are doing, I think the value has been in the personal friendships that have been maintained through the years. One of my best students lives in Salinas, and I have gone up to visit him a few times. And his kids are now going through school, and one's getting ready to go to college. And he's always so grateful for what we did in teaching English. But then he left after the economists took over.
Mm-hmm.
He was in the middle of law school, and the Vietnamese didn't want anybody in law, and so everybody had to go to economics or some other field.
Mm-hmm.
And he didn't like that, and so he finally left and got out with his wife, and he had a couple little kids when he came out, and then spent some years in the Philippines. And I tried to ask him in one of my visits, what did it mean?
Mm-hmm.
And his English is still fairly broken. His kids speak that language. But it was a friendship that was more important. And to me, it's the friendships, despite whatever the government situation is. It's like being interested in Mr. Coy and knowing that he's a great farmer, and I went right by his place 5.5 years ago. Darn, I wish he could have stopped. Or Mr. Chan at the elementary school, and we went right by that school as we drove through Phan Rang. I mean, that's what's important to me.
Mm-hmm.
We were in a village north of Phan Rang, in a village called Ho Diem. In fact, if you could stop there and not get in trouble with the security people, it'd be marvelous for you to visit the Catholic Church there and ask about a few people.
Mm-hmm.
But my concern would be the what security
I think so.
Concerns it would be for those folks.
Yeah.
because as a result of our being there, well, let me just tell you what happened. 1967, I had taken some photographs of some children at the church in Hoziem. And keep in mind, Hoziem is a Catholic village that came down from the north in 1954.
Mm-hmm. This is H-O-D-I-E-M?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm using the northern pronunciation.
That's right, go ahead.
Hoyum. Mm-hmm. It's on Highway 1, on the east side of Highway 1, 5 or 6, 7 miles north of Phan Rang, and it's immediately west of Ninh Chu Beach, about 2 or 3 kilometers. Mm-hmm. In 1960, and our cook was from there, and our cook's sister also was a cook for a couple of the AID fellows, Steve Zadig, former IVS mm-hmm. of Vietnam, and Alan Hankins, AID. Alan is in Arlington, Virginia.
What's his last name again?
Hankins, H-A-N-K-I-N-S.
Uh-huh.
And he was one of the youngest AID people.
Uh-huh.
Went to Afghanistan, by the way.
Oh.
They're like the Peace Corps. He was the first real Peace Corps person under AID mm-hmm. Before there was a Peace Corps. Lived out in a remote village. He married Mary Lou, whose father was AID Laos and other countries, a long time career person. Anyway, Alan, we're talking about the visit for you. Occasionally, I or Burl together would go out and visit the folks at the church, and this is where our cook was from.
Mm-hmm.
That was really her home, and we would have tea out there in a little conference room about the size of this part of the office, mm-hmm. and the local priest, the high school. I had a lot of friends out there in Hoi An Village because being a Catholic village, a lot of their students would come in to Trung Vinh Ki High School. So during my IVS days, I took a lot of pictures. And so in preparation for our trip in 1990, I had some of these slides printed up. And I had a couple girls. They were then 8, 9, or 10. And I took it along just to see if I could find these kids. And sure enough, when we, five of us went down and in 1990, on that first January tour group that Don took, stopped in Bangoi, where two of the IVSers were married, and they were on this tour group. And I don't recall their names right now. She has, she's injured in an auto accident and has to use braces on her legs and walks with crutches. Anyway, I can't recall their names, but we stopped in Bangoi, and Central Committee of the local party was having a meeting that day. We were there visiting and didn't get in trouble. Took pictures all over the place, even though it said, do not take pictures. Come on, babe.
Oh, right.
Shooting our camera. But were very warmly received, I thought, by the Central Committee folks in Bangla. And explained what we're doing, that we were tourists, and that we had lived and worked there, and just come back to see how the country was. From there, we went on down to Hoi An Village, stopped to try to find my cook. Real was find my cook.
Mm-hmm.
And we learned in Hoi An that she is quite ill and was being taken care of at a Catholic church north of Nha Trang.
Mm-hmm.
That we'd just come through the mm-hmm. night before.
Mm-hmm.
And but we also asked about these two women, the former girls, but mm-hmm. now women. And the person that we met at the church who spoke English indicated that this one person was gone, alive,
mm-hmm.
The other lady just lived a few blocks away, and so I asked her, could you have her come so we could visit? And she did, with two of her four daughters, two little ones, just a little. And we have pictures of this. And Don helped him interpret. And so we sat around in the same room where we had tea in 1966 to 68, and had tea again, and had a little reunion with one of these the villagers who had been a little child when I was in IDS. And we talked about people like Dick Peters, who had been assigned to Phan Rang. I think Dick had been up at William Village part of the time. Peter Hunting, who was killed down in Long Xuyen, I think it was, in 64 or 65, whenever. But and so the lady could not remember, or she recalled me in particular, but she knew, she recalled the tall Americans. I mean, when you're a little kid, anybody that's taller is tall. But it was so neat to be there and to meet her and to have this reunion. And then as we were leaving to going down to Phan Rang, the security people came. We were getting in our van, and the security people came and said they wanted to talk to us. They then detained us for 2.5 hours over the noon hour. And the consequence was that we did not get to Phan Rang that day. We had our passports confiscated if we had them with us, and told to return to the district offices the next day. And they decided what we would do. But in that group was Jill Beauvais, Peter's sister. Jill is a wife of a pastor of Dutch Reformed Church up in Napa, and then the other town is, yeah, starts with S.
You're in Sonoma?
Sonoma.
Sonoma.
Yeah, in the Sonoma Dutch Reformed Church. But Jill was with us in that tour group, and she was on the trip specifically to go to Phan Rang. Specifically go to Phan Rang. Then we couldn't get there.
You mean, well, what happened at the district office?
Well, then the next day, as we went back up to Nha Trang that afternoon, and Don, being as calm as he always is, we stopped for lunch in Bang Oi, which was great. Had a nice fish dinner. And then we got back up to Nha Trang, and the next day, as scheduled, we then were to drive to Saigon. Well, because we had to stop in the district headquarters at Ba Tha, this is where there are three Cham temples, north of Phan Rang, we were told then that we would have to go down to Phan Thiet with a police escort, not escort, actually a policeman riding in one of the vehicles. And and see the chief of security for the province. So we got the group down. Don got all of us down to Phan Thiet, left the major part of the group at the hotel out on the beach in Phan Thiet. And the five of us, plus our tour guide, had to go over to the security headquarters for Tuan Hai Province. And we were each given a $100 fine and a receipt for the $100 and a piece of paper that said we were criminals violating Vietnamese law. And what we violated was the fact that we didn't have an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper saying that we had permission to be in Hoi An and Phan Rang. And as each province in 1990 really set their own rules and controlled by the security apparatus. And in Hoi An, keep in mind, being a Catholic village, but these two North Vietnamese cops, well, they were cops, they were security people, were really upset with us. And I can call the senior officer looking at Don. And you ought to ask Don about that interrogation. But Don was grilled by those folks. And covered the others with us, the former IVSers and the Vietnamese, fairly well also. And they could follow along the conversation far better than I could. That was not a pleasant occurrence. Mm-hmm. And for Jill, she was absolutely terrified because of the fact that her brother had been killed by the Viet Cong mm-hmm. in an ambush meant for a military convoy.
Mm-hmm.
Peter had passed a convoy
right.
and rode into the ambush.
Mm-hmm.
And so her whole purpose for the trip was this. Mm-hmm. And mine too. My purpose is to go to Phan Lan
mm-hmm.
and see Van and some of my students. In fact, later I learned that there were 30 students or so waiting at Van's house to see me. Just, it would have been so great.
That's okay. I've been corresponding with Van Nguyen Giáp, and I expected to see him when I went to Vietnam, and there was no way I could see him. I mean, I don't know what the problem was, but...
They wouldn't.
Well, it wasn't they wouldn't let me see it. It was that when I was in Hanoi, I was under the auspices of this organization, and I told the organization, this is what I'd like to do. And, you know, I'm sure it was possible he'll see any academic, really, who asked to see him. But they just said, no, it doesn't look like we can do it. I'll look into it. And the next day, no, I haven't had a chance to look into it. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, there wasn't any reason, I think. It was just maybe I didn't yell loud enough or something, but I just thought that was kind of the thing that would happen if you were on an educational visit, you know, and you're an academic, I sent him copies of all my books with letters in French and in English. He does speak English. He knows English anyway. His wife speaks English, and his second wife. And he's like 85 now or 86, and now when I go back, I don't know, you know, 2 years is, I mean, I've seen my mother. There's a big difference between 82 and 84.
Yes, sir.
And,
well, there can be.
There can be. For some people,
well, I have a 103-year-old here who is just incredible, mm-hmm. and another who's 101 next month
mm-hmm.
and still independent.
That's a nice weather. But let's go back to Phan Rang when you were mm-hmm. when you were there. What was the ethnic religious makeup of that district? Is it
of the province?
Mm-hmm.
Mostly Buddhist, of course. The large concentration of Cham south of Phan Rang, and if I recall, in Bat Top there's a small group of Cham still today,
mm-hmm.
and out of Top Cham there's a group, but a large concentration south of Phan Rang in the district to the south.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Catholics in the province, especially because of Ho Yim village, where there's a large Catholic church, and then in Phan Rang there is a large Catholic church just a few blocks from where we live.
Mm-hmm.
That's on Highway 1. But I did not know the, nor do I recall the breakdown. And I'm sure there is a large number of Vietnamese that were of no particular faith at all. Especially out in the remote villages.
No, that question was just a blind to see if you say anything about the Cham population, whether you ever did anything with them or noticed.
Oh, I did. In the fall of 67, under some prodding, I would say, from Gene Stolzfus, we tried to develop a handicraft outlet program. And there was a Cham lady who made weavings at this wide and made them into blankets and tablecloths and so on. And the project was to try to develop an outlet for her through the Vietnamese handicraft organization in Saigon. So I spent a couple trips going down to Saigon to try to develop that.
Mm-hmm.
But I did not get it developed. By the time I left in March, I can still recall part of the, I had a consignment that I never did get paid for by some of the IBSers, I think, and others. I don't know where it all ended up, but
I bought some Afghan dresses in Kabul with the same results. there's no reason not to move forward a bit. March of 1968, January of 1968, of course, is a big moment, and not just for the Tet Offensive, but IDS.
That's almost like yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to. Who wants Galen beer?
Did you hear about David Gittleson's death before the Tet Offensive? Were you aware that any of that had happened?
No. My recollection, Mark, is that on January 31st of 68, I was in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned this to you on the phone last night. And I was reading the Tokyo Times, and I wonder if I even kept the article. I haven't gone back to all my files from those years. But there's an article somewhere in the paper that I read that indicated that there was a lot of fighting in Vietnam. And then there was another article about David being killed in an area in the Delta. And and then the next day I went from Tokyo to Seoul, Korea. And that was the 1st of February, and that was 10 days after the bubble had been captured.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed, now I don't recall, but I stayed with, I think, a missionary family in Seoul, somebody from the Church and Christian Missionary Alliance, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
They also checked at the Church World Service office to see whoever was there. Well, I was there just as a tourist. Went to the museums, a couple of the museums, went down to Incheon to see where MacArthur had landed.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a cold December day, very bright and sunny, but boy, was it miserably cold. And then left on the 4th of February, went down to Taipei and stayed with the family of one of the aid people. And I was scheduled to leave shortly, but because of the fighting in Vietnam, I couldn't, if I recall. I learned that was a Robert Kidd's wife and children that I stayed with. And Bob had just been injured, and their house was attacked with a rocket. And their cook, is my cook's sister, lost an eye in that. The rocket hit the LP tank.
Mm-hmm.
Liquid petroleum tank and blew up. And her bed was right next to that, just through a block wall.
Mm-hmm.
And Alan and Bob were upstairs in the bedrooms. And Steve Zadig, by that time, and Vicky had left. I think they left they were married in December, and I think they left right after that. That's a whole other story about use of us. Military or U.S. aircraft for a wedding party to go from Paran to Dalat.
Mm-hmm.
That ended up in some AID file, but an article talking about misuse of government property during the war. And I was on that flight both ways.
Boy, if that's the kind of thing that we wasted our money on, I wonder why we lost.
That was in December. That is amazing.
Yes.
That's another story.
Mm-hmm.
Steve and Vicky are currently in Macedonia. His last overseas assignment at the AID.
Mm-hmm.
And, Macedonia, that part of Yugoslavia?
It was, the former Yugoslavia. Yeah.
But the southeastern part?
Mm-hmm. It's the one whose name the Greeks really hate. But it's also the one where we've actually been the most effective in our policy.
Right. I hope you guys can talk to Steve.
Mm-hmm.
When he comes back next year. That may be too late for your study.
No, probably not. Not for the book, for the oral history.
He was with IVS for 2 years, and I'm with Dave, and he's been with Dave ever since. No, he has not been with Dave ever since. He was with Dave for a while. Then worked for a couple other organizations, government organizations, and went back to Aiden. He was with State of Delaware Water Resources Board and and the Arizona Water Resources folks.
Okay, well, he's on the eastern. He's on the eastern list, so I'll, yeah. I'll check that out.
But January of '68, I got back into country. I think it was the 8th of February or the 10th of February, and I was on the second plane to go back into Thompson Neck after the airport was reopened.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't know what we were going back to. I can recall being rather nervous. I don't recall now if I had left from Taipei or from Hong Kong.
Mm-hmm.
But wherever I was staying with friends.
Mm-hmm.
If it was Hong Kong, I was staying with the, I just don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter.
Mm-hmm.
The seatmate next to me was with one of the oil companies, and he told me as we were going in that they had not heard from some of their people. I've often wondered if some of the people, those people ever made it out. But we had read in the newspaper, I think, about the missionaries in Pleiku or Bemituit that were murdered in the attack on their area.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got back into Saigon. Finally had clearance to go back to Phan Rang. Went out to the airport because of the curfew. We had to stay overnight at the airport and then to catch our flight early the next morning, 1:23. Remember those plans?
I used to play on them in the airport. There was an Air National Guard base next to my house.
Okay. But that was the night Thompson had one of the worst rocket attacks, I guess. And there was a rocket that woke us up. I had on my Vietnamese pajamas.
not a good move.
Not a good move. No, I was sitting in a BOQ on the lower bunk anyway.
Thank goodness you didn't have a satchel with you or something, too. Yeah.
I actually, I don't know what I was carrying, but I know I grabbed my my camera and some of my valuables and just took it with me to the bunker where we were directed. And I had strange looks.
Yes, I would imagine.
These memories. But then the next morning, got dressed, went to breakfast. Went over to wherever civilians were, went to get transport through the rest of the country and found the plane that we were to take was one of the planes hit. And of course, nothing was left of it. So decided to go back to the IVS house. And on the way back, even before I left the airport, another rocket hit one of the PXs just as I went by.